You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving get up a second down. Thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
People. You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing ghetto to yourself, yeah. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. Repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman, we always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, and it has to get done, I know you're going to do it, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. You always persevere, and we love you for it. But if you don't have to, stay inside. Remember, it's serious out there. It is serious. Protect yourself. Always wear a mask. Wash your hands. All those things. Keep social distance. Protect yourself. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening, I'm going to go through this fast because I want to get to my guest, Brother Jeremiah Kamara, and talk about his documentary, Holy Hierarchy, The Religious Roots of White Racism. It's fantastic. Other program we have here, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and the times are going to give are Eastern times, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays at 6 o'clock, I'm going to get a new lineup, too, because I know there's some programs that I'm missing. But Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern is Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Black Reality Think Tank, The Millennials. I heard the program last night. It was a very good program. You know, very good program. It's talking about some deep stuff and talking about, you know, the mental illness that is in our community. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. And then on Saturdays, Black Reality Think Tank, Weekend Edition, and followed by the Sankofa Elders Council with Brother Afonso Watkins. And then it's Sunday, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening, once again, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And Monday through Friday, from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., the Warren Valentine Show, right here on Time for an Awakening Media. The number to call, 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Inye Sesem, usually around this time I announce some of the things that I support, but I'm going to try to go, you know, forego that. But believe me, some very good businesses that I believe need to be supported and programs that need to be supported. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought, July 23rd. If they come and get your men at night, they will be back in the morning for your women. African proverb. The steadily increasing incarceration of African young women girls and young women only tell part of the story of the racist institutionalized assault against sisters. In an effort to reduce its ancient traditions to today and give the illusion of correcting for the sexism of its patriarchal, anti-female social and socializing context, European culture has been busy convincing our children that their sex is irrelevant in terms of their behavior they should model. The result of the move to eradicate
gender differences to create a comfortable, sexually perverted world for Europeans is a socialized drive amongst girls and women to be boys and men, so they can gain the power and privilege most exclusively associated with being male. In our daughters, this shift in orientation has manifested itself in an increased violence, aggressiveness, and homosexuality. In our sons, an effeminate homosexuality emerges, changing them from possessing the potential to be the men Western society's most fears into powerless males, desperately in need of protection by white males. In a strict viciousness, sexually charged, hierarchical, arranged society, our daughters see males as most valued and powerful individuals in a society where the most extreme aggressors are the most awarded. And having studied these predatory prey games, they have concluded that they must be even more aggressive than those they seek to overtake. Affirm, they will not get our men and women or our sons and daughters. Affirm, they will not get our men and women or our sons and daughters. July 24th. I freed thousands of captives. I could have freed thousands more if they'd known that they were in captivity. Sister Armenta, Harriet Tubman. Nana Armenta, a.k.a. Harriet Tubman, is still chasing the plantations of West, scanning, searching for Africans ready for revolution, ready for the liberation that they will release them from the captivity and bring them back home. Her spirit is embedded in the many courageous sisters following her incomparable lead, determined to bring their people to freedom at any cost, walking along newfound paths carved by old railroad conductors, ways to freedom which only they were allowed to become familiar. As with their ancestor, Armenta, they now, they know friend from foe, and fully their mission without fear, and they will fulfill their mission without fear. Inadvertently, the price for this collecting prices on their heads. But they, like Nana Armenta, are packing just in case. So keep an eye out. Be ever ready, for they only call once. If you're ready, you had a better take their hand. Follow their lead quickly and quietly. For these mistakable sisters still have many plantations to work and lead them from those Africans who have finally come to recognize they were enslaved, but now want to be free. Affirm, I am the spirit of Armenta. Affirm, I am the spirit of Armenta. July 25th, truth must seek justice. Justice must seek truth. When justice triumphs, truth will reign on the earth. African proverb. Good hearts never settle. No matter the failures, they never cease their search until they attain unqualified satisfaction. Even so, seeking spirits know that awareness is only a step toward the next revelation. Wise people with good hearts and humble spirits know that truth reveals itself through focused deliberation. Such individuals know that any exercise of justice can only be correct when it reveals, decodes, and crushes the lie within that which must be corrected. They know that correction is indispensable if they are able to live without suffering the contradictions of knowing but not doing. Such persons recognize that truthful justice must be commensurate to the magnitude and duration of the unjust. Affirm, I am determined to seek truth and justice. Affirm, I am determined to seek truth and justice. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. Brothers and sisters, I want to welcome my guests. We can have as much time with the dear brother as possible. I see some people lining up for calls, and I hope you want to ask questions and or just listen. That's cool too. But I'm always honored and it's a pleasure to have with me Brother Jeremiah Kamara. Brother Jeremiah Kamara, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, very well, dear brother. Very well.
Oh, how are you doing, Brother Oshie?
I'm doing well. I am doing well. I'm excited about the discussion today. I have looked at the documentary Holy Hierarchy and a few times, and Man, I tell you, you did an outstanding job. That's a great work. And so for those brothers and sisters, those brothers and sisters out there listening, you can go to Amazon.com and put in Holy Hierarchy. And then there you can pay to watch one time or pay whatever the fee that is and watch what how many times you want. Then you'll have it. And believe me, it's worth having. Like I said,
thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
You know it, because I'm going to tell you, when I met you back in Milwaukee, when you were preparing and working on the documentary Contradiction, you know, and I tell you, when I got a chance to see it, even though I'm in it, I didn't want to be in it, but I tell you.
By osmosis, right?
Yeah, for real. If that brother didn't stand up to ask a question, I wouldn't have been in it, damn it.
But the brother I often wonder where that brother is now, man.
I hear you. You know, but I enjoyed that documentary, watched it many times, and, you know, because a lot of it was filmed here in the Atlanta area, you know.
Right.
We're talking about the people here in Atlanta. But, you know, that was good. It was very good. But Holy Hierarchy is something else, man. To me, it is a documentary that educators should show students. Mm-hmm. It really is. Because if you want to get a real understanding, and that's our problem, we don't understand racism. We don't understand. And I don't even, you know, how I term it, because I don't use white supremacy, because they're not white, nor are they supreme. What I use is, what I use is European Caucasian extremism, because they are very extreme. Racism.
And you notice the only time that I will use white supremacy, I'll put the phrase, the notion of white supremacy.
Yeah.
Because it's simply, you know, it's not a notion, an assumption, a presumption, and a stance that they take based on an idea that they believe that, you know, they were made differently.
Right.
And that it's them and then it's the others. They're the default group of it all.
Right.
And then you have the others. And so this is, and of course we're not counting all whites. We're just saying we're generalizing. That's really what we can do, going by what has happened historically.
And because what has happened historically, you see the results. You see the results. You see how we behave. You see how they continue to behave. You see what happens globally. You know. So you know.
Well, let me tell you, man, I think me and you are at the point, you know, and of age to where we see the kumbaya going on. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just to be fair about it, I'm sure that there are some measures to, you know, bring about more of a humane society. I wouldn't say that there are no measures. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, at the end of the day, it's just window dressing.
Yeah, it's symbolism. You
know, it's just symbolism.
Without substance.
Right, because, you know, you'll speak at the end of the day, really. You know, black people have got a few choices. You know, one, we can create our own enterprises and businesses and corporations. We can do that. Our own type of, you know, whatever, Facebook, Google, and Netflix, and so forth. We can do that. Or we can trust that whites will make us 51% of the shareholder of most of these, you know, big multi-million, billion-dollar corporations. But I've never read anywhere, heard anything about a conqueror who will, you know, take your land, rob you of your resources, and then turn around and share those same things with you equally.
Yeah.
That would render slavery in vain. Slavery was an economically driven, And it was to enable whites to have the advantage over you. So if black people, the numbers, according to the numbers, you know, 13, 14% of the population, how can they be 50% of anything?
Mm-hmm.
You're leaving out the Hispanic, Latino demographic, who, according to the numbers, again, I say, are 16% of mm-hmm. the population, greater than you.
Right.
So by virtue of equality, it certainly wouldn't fall in favor of, you know, blacks getting what they want, and that's, you know, 50%. I don't believe that they're going to share those resources with you.
Not at all.
But so the problem is it's the way that we look at it. You know, I mentioned this in an interview Wednesday. And, of course, me of all people getting religious. and I'm not being religious. It's in the book of Proverbs. But I love it. It says, envy thou not the oppressor and choose none of his way.
Oh, I say. I agree. Yeah.
And I mean, if you mm-hmm. cut out half of the ways and the desires of, you know, mainstream society, you would simplify your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get back to all that there is in the first place. It's just the grass and the wind, the trees, the rain, the sun, the flowers, the stars, the moon, the ocean. That's all it is, man.
Mm-hmm.
The animals that exist. But we're caught up into this too much into the things that may not be good for us. There's not a balance there. So we got a lot of work to do, Brother Oshie. A lot of work to do, man.
Yeah. And to me, you know, what's
happening.
And
then let me cut you off real
sure,
quick.
Go ahead.
I forgot to mention amalgamation.
Mm. Mm.
You see, there are maybe situations to where this white owner of this corporation, now his granddaughter is black. His grandson is black.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen through, you know, just, I mean, I can't imagine what the world will look like, you know, 50 years from now. I think that whole term race will dissolve. It may not, but there's no basis biologically for race.
No.
Race is simply a construct of environmental dictates. So it may come down to that.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's a lot of work to do, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at it like this. I mean, after hundreds and hundreds of years, after Europeans woke up having been exposed to what Muslims did in the western part of Europe and Portugal and Spain, being the only mm-hmm. information light of the world at the time, you know, and mm-hmm. they woke up and they said, this is our renaissance. You know, when I was a young man, I remember I was in middle school and I read about the, because I always liked history. And I read about mm-hmm. I read about the Renaissance of Man, and
I remember that book.
Remember that book? Not mm-hmm. understanding, it wasn't the Renaissance of Man; it was mm-hmm. the awakening of Europeans, and the awakening of mm-hmm. Europeans was detrimental to the damn planet. Had they kept their ass in Europe, you know, then that I mean, because mm-hmm. everywhere they have gone, they have brought death, domination, and destruction.
Well, we got to remember now, one of the things I think is underappreciated is the trauma the Europeans went through. They were devastated. You had from 1347 to 1349, you had almost a whole continent.
Yeah.
A one out of two ratio of, you know, birth mm-hmm. death rate.
Right.
So, and then you have acts such as the flagellant act, where people were actually gaining momentum and watching people beat themselves to be more Christ-like.
Mm-hmm.
you're talking about a period during the Reformation period, man, where everything physical was to be disdained and everything in the spiritual world, because God was so upset about what was going on in the world at the moment that his physical presence left. And so anything physical was to be, despised. And so you had people that would go years without bathing. Mm-hmm. They thought it was the proper thing to do. This is what this book comes out of. We talked yesterday at, Brother Cobb's great spot there.
Oh, yeah, the Black Dot Culture Center and Bookstore. That's right.
Man. Thank you for taking me there, man.
Oh, yeah.
I used to go up that way years ago, but I haven't been over there, mm-hmm. For a while. And, food was great and everything, and I'm excited to connecting the black dot to the dots.
Right on.
Need to be connected.
That's right. Ashe.
But getting back to their trauma, man, you're talking about the people who were infested with all kinds of diseases, man. And in a way that no other people has ever looked at women, but they needed some type of reason why these things were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Reasons that were so deep that it goes into their nursery rhymes. It's hardly a European nursery rhyme that is not about death or being hurt in some kind of way, mm-hmm. or having a bad ending, But and you see this trauma, and he's never really had group therapy to deal with this trauma. His way of dealing with other groups of people is to create an equation of white over non-white,
mm-hmm.
power equation.
Mm-hmm.
And he pretty much has this pattern. And so to expect him to change, I think, is unrealistic.
And even at this,
leopards don't change their spots. But
right.
I mean, what do we expect to do? To share with you equally. So their way was to dominate,
mm-hmm.
because when they came out of the Dark Ages, caves and the unpleasant environmental conditions, when they finally came out of that, they were very suspicious of others. They, you can't have this. This is mine. I'm never letting this go.
Mm-hmm.
And it created some type of psychosis. And one of the psychoses is for the Caucasians' inability to relax, or the gene that causes you to relax. They are very restless. Very 24/7-ish.
Yeah.
Well,
when they were in that dominated state during the Middle Ages, and, like I said, for 700 years, the only light or information that was going on in Europe was in the western part of Europe provided by the Moors. And they taught them a number of things, how to get them animals out the castle or out your home and put them in a pen, how to wash your ass and all those things.
How to sail.
Yeah.
How to navigate the water.
Exactly. I mean, all those things, map making capabilities, ship making, all those
things.
So Europeans didn't have no originality, but what mm-mm. they did with Martel and Charlemagne. That's why that brother shouldn't have his name as Charlemagne the God. It bothers me.
I've thought about that.
Yeah, it bothers me. But Charlemagne and those, and they said, we may war amongst ourselves, and they have. They are very warring people. They are very mm-hmm. violent people. He said, we may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. If they're not us, we're coming together, and we're going to dominate them. And
well, that's right. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
We have to have a common enemy.
And the common enemy is outside of themselves, humanity.
Right.
And they want to dominate and subdue them, because when when they said that and they took it in that initiative to go out and explore, Marco Polo goes to China. He comes back. He comes back with pasta because everybody thinks, because Marco Polo was Italian. Everybody thinks pasta is Italian. Pasta is Chinese. People think that rice is Chinese, but rice is African. You know, but what Marco Polo came back was, which was the deepest, was fireworks, gunpowder, which Europeans used to develop superior weaponry. That, to me, the shipmaking and the weaponry were the main facilitators for their particular rise in the so-called medieval times or their awakening. And they went around the world taking people's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England. And when they came there, they didn't come to bargain. They didn't come to barter. They didn't come to pay.
Negotiate.
There was none of that. We came to take.
Well, this is what I'm saying, Brother Oshie. I never got the memo. I never got the Facebook message, the telegram, the email, whatever, stating that somehow conquerors change their ways. And I don't know if you received it, but I've never gotten that.
Nah.
So I think it's quite natural for us to be suspicious of what's going on. Not to the extent to where it causes paranoia, but at least to have some healthy degree of skepticism.
Oh, no doubt. What's next?
Right. You know? And I'm very, you know, when I hear Bill Gates talk about, you know, blacks can go first.
Oh, in the vaccines?
Yeah. And I mean, it's in like you're talking trials. To a baby, like you're talking to somebody, you know, 4 years old. But the sad part is there will be blacks who will be first in line.
Mm-hmm. Well, one African country, I can't remember the country, I don't know if it was Zambia, somebody offered to have their people test the vaccines out. And I believe they were corrected, hopefully by the people themselves, if not the government, you know, because, you know, we've always been the test for Europeans.
Well, yeah. Well, let me tell you. Just to, you know, stay on target of what we need to be, what we need to do, what we can do. You know, we see that church was not really essential.
Mm-hmm.
It had to close. The state had power over it. It was the state and the governor who was saying, "Thou shalt." Thou shalt not open businesses. Thou shalt close your church. Mm-hmm. So we see that is something that's just, you know, we can't rely on that. Because that wasn't even essential in the first place.
Right.
So our thoughts have to change now. Those people who... You know, there were many people that were affected, you know, by this whole COVID thing and losing a lot of money and stuff like that. But I'm sure that not going to church has saved black people a lot of money.
Oh, man. Not going to church saved them a lot of money. Well, you know, some of them sent their money in through a Cash App or PayPal, quote, religiously.
I know when you do that, see, you know, sometimes, like I always said, the giant falls asleep and leaves the back door open. The back door is open for you to walk away from something that's not essential.
Mm-hmm.
For you, like Carter G. Woodson says, to create a back door to go out of to serve your special purpose. You're going to tithe anyway, even though you're not physically there. That is creating a back door for yourself. The back door is open for you to just walk away from it. is in no position to help you in any way. Now, you can continue with the prayers. I just saw a friend of mine back home today, Oshi, who is, out of commission for a couple of weeks. Some type of illness, physical illness. And there was all these praying hands. Just get well. I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you. If that is the case, why are we going through what we're going through now? You know, Brother Oshi, can you hear me?
Oh, I got you. I'm listening.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Okay. You know, and we're this virus, Oshi, is thought to be so powerful that we can be in our cars by ourselves wearing our masks, and we could be walking the street and there's no one in front of us, no one in back of us. If that virus is that ubiquitous, that omnipresent, you know, then it's on our pillowcases. Mm-hmm. It's in our kitchen cabinets. It's on our eyelids. But they say that God is omnipresent, that his presence is everywhere. If the presence, if this God had the, was, you know, presence was everywhere, then it would have the ability to stop this microscopic virus. No one is turning to their prayers to do that because they see it's just not, the reality is on you right now.
Yeah.
Even the reality of evolution, it's on you right now. You have to evolve.
And the bottom line is every faith, every people, every country that has a faith, be it Hinduism, Buddhism, Shintoism, I could go on, Mormons, whatever, can be affected by this virus. And y'all can come, and that, you know, I know there's that saying, when two or more are gathered in my name and they pray, you know, that'll be good. And, you know.
Right. We've done that.
Yeah. There's folks right now praying hard, and yet more and more people there. Back in May, the South was talking plenty smack, particularly Florida. Oh man, the Florida governor was just sickening, thinking that we had a control of this, is that, you know, we're going to do this and that. And of course, Trump was upset because Charlotte, North Carolina said, no, we're not going to have a full in-person convention like y'all want. Well, then Trump said, but then forget you. We're going to go to Florida. We're going to go to Jacksonville. They'll allow us to have a full convention without thousands of people without masks. Mm-hmm. And now look at Florida. Look at California. Look at Texas. Look at Georgia. All throughout, and still, even in the northern states, this is a world pandemic. Some may argue about it being a plandemic. I'm not going to debate and discuss that at this time. We can talk about 5G, Wuhan, and all that stuff later, but because the bottom line is people are dying. I know people who have died. My good friend, Brother Dr. Conrad Worrell, died last month from the COVID virus. A strong brother in our struggle. Some brothers in Milwaukee that I know have died. A brother here has died. So people are dying. So the most important thing for us in this situation at this very time is, how can I keep myself safe? Well, the number one thing you can keep yourself safe with, hell, don't go out the house. But if you do, wear a mask. Be protective. Be cognizant. Be aware. Don't shake hands.
That's right.
You know?
And what we also could do, because, you know, we're in the age of information. And so we need information. Mm-hmm. Wearing a mask and wearing gloves is not necessarily information. It is, but I think that in addition to that, we need to focus on our bodies and how to develop and build our immune system.
Mm-hmm.
I had a mask on the other day, Oshi, and I could smell just about every substance that I had in front of me.
Yeah.
So these molecules are so small that the CDC had originally stated that masks were ineffective. Now, if you can smell stuff, those are small particles. You know that this virus is microscopically small and can penetrate most of what's going on, you know, most of how the orifices throughout your body, you know, your portals. And we can't totally rely on that. So we have to be proactive and be informed about our immune systems, how they work, how to build them,
right,
how to develop them. And there's no money in telling people about the body's ability to heal itself, the mind's effect on the body's ability to heal itself. No money in that.
Right.
But I think that's an area that we focus on. We never know when any type of virus is going to be unleashed. And I'm like you when it comes to talking about how it got here and all this type of stuff. I only know what I've read. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there. I'm not privy to the information.
But the bottom line is, you know, people are dying.
Right. you can't say. You know, if someone has a gun pointed to your head, you're not going to say, excuse me, who manufactured that gun that you have? You're going to take cover.
That's right.
You know, you're not going to ask those questions. Mm-hmm. But we can't totally rely on what we have in front of us, man. Masks.
Yeah.
There are people that have died that have worn masks. I'm certain of that.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, in addition to wearing masks, let's realize that sunshine is unspeakably gifting to our immune systems, man.
Mm-hmm. You need that. You need at least about 15 to 20 minutes of sunlight.
Right.
You know,
exercise, if you're able to. Certain diets. And these are the things that you know, we're not going to hear on CNN. We're not going to hear that necessarily. You know, they may have a very small segment, but we're not going to hear that, though. But OCR thinking has got to change.
Well, I mean,
nothing can stay the same, man. Yeah. This is the one constant that we know.
Yeah.
And my thing is, like we were talking about yesterday, they never knew back in the 16, 17, 1800s that May of 2020 – you know, would ultimately come. They never knew that it would probably set the world on a path that it'll never be returned to its original state. And I'm hoping that.
Yeah.
I do see some activities in the black communities, man, that are very positive and connecting.
Right, because we don't want to go back to normal. Or back to what it was.
No, we don't. What was normal, Oshie?
Yeah. But you know what Caucasians would definitely like to go back to what's normal. But even though there are changing signs, painting Black Lives Matter, getting rid of a lot of the iconography, you know, Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, what was that? Yeah, somebody said they're even going to change when they list a property. They're not going to call it the master bedroom no more. So they taking this stuff, you know.
Oh, wow.
They're not going to call it the master bedroom, you know. But,
okay.
But see, I still say this is symbolism without substance, because the real substance is the economics of this country and this world, and they are in control of that. And they're not going to redistribute wealth. They're not going to give reparations. They're not going to do none of those things. So, you know, even though they say we don't want a team called the Washington Redskins no more, and we're going to call them the Washington whatevers, but the bottom line is the things will be the same.
Symbolism is powerful, man. And since we know that they're not going to turn around and share things with you equally, since we know that, then that means that our paradigm, our premise has to change. What we value and what we hold as important has to change. Symbolism is powerful because it speaks louder than the spoken word, actually. It's deeply embedded. I can go to a drugstore, any one of them, CVS, Walgreens, you know, and walk into that store to purchase a greeting card, say an anniversary card, a birthday card, and I'm in the mahogany section or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I had to walk past the magazines. In every magazine stand, there is a religious section, and you will see these religious icons. Now, even though you walked past that, of course you didn't see it consciously. You may have or you may not have, but your subconscious did. It perceives everything in totality. So the way you feel about yourself, if you believe that Jesus was white, then I can kind of somewhat understand why whites would feel somewhat supreme. If he's white, we're allowing movies, you know, too many to mention, the Son of God, Passion of the Christ. And Netflix now has Peter, and I think Peter and John or Peter and Paul. And they're white. Now, when you are declaring this, how can we be put off by anyone's notion of white supremacy? Now, if this Jesus is black, he's got a lot of explaining to do. I'm saying no iconography in the United States. Why should a non-white be subjected to going? I mean, you go in Walmart around, you know, Christmas time, you got Jesus candles, you have nativity scenes. And Jesus is white in Walmart, therefore Jesus is white.
Well, you know,
you're at the largest retailer in the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Millions of people see that. So even though it is the economics of it, these films make millions of dollars, man. Every year, you know, around Easter, you have many, many religious shows. And so you have this white iconography that always is the dominant character, this white icon, who's the dominant character in all of these movies. What are you saying? What exactly are you saying?
Well, you know, when they came out of that medieval age and dark age and placed themselves at the top of the pinnacle and kicking everybody else off of that pinnacle, basically saying that we're the top in humanity. Everybody else is lower. Unfortunately, us at the lowest position. That's why globally, nobody wants to be dark. Nobody wants dark skin. When you look at other countries and they present themselves in magazines and TV and so forth, they show those who look most white or most Caucasian and so forth. But yet they may have a serious amount of population that are melanated, that are dark skinned. But yet
you got 75% of Nigerian women, man, are bleaching their skin. 75%.
See, our problem is that we don't understand the depths of seriousness of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege on the psyche of African people globally. Not just because when I was in Ghana, white Jesus was, I mean, even when I was there the first time back in the 90s, posters of white Jesus, I had to take pictures of it because I just couldn't believe it. Nobody had told me or warned me to say, hey, man, when you go to Ghana, when you go to Accra, you're going to see a lot of stuff of white Jesus. Yeah. Oh, man, it was all up in that.
A lot of the stores,
yeah.
Have names, you know, of his grace cell phones or Lord have mercy, this, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the symbolism, What's first? Nigeria has the second largest, it might be the largest, but I think it's the second largest statue of Jesus in the world. And it's a white man. You're talking to Nigeria.
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me that symbolism is not speaking loudly? Symbolism is important. Iconography is important.
It really
is. Listen, you will never get that image out of your head, Oshie, that white Jesus that you saw when you were a kid. And I don't care how many black Jesus images you've been exposed to.
Exactly.
Listen, man, when the judge tells the jury to strike that from the record, that should not have been mentioned.
Right.
It's too late. They've already heard it.
Exactly. In fact,
you've
a lot of
already
times...
seen that, man. There's no turning back. Like, I remember that Jesus, man, in my kitchen. And it was that type of picture where the eyes just follow.
They kind of follow you. Yeah. You better not do nothing wrong.
6, 7 years old, man.
Yeah.
Seeing that. And so that's always there.
Yeah. You know,
but the way I see it now is comical. It's kind of comical now. I mean,
yeah, because
I'm not affected by it. I'm too far removed from that. I've been out of religion since I was 21 years old, 21, 22, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, but those images are powerful. When these children have their doctor's appointments, and you see it throughout the country, man,
mm-hmm.
we can't deny that this is not correct.
Well, you know,
they see that big biblical, you know, that big, you know, white Bible there,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the dentist office,
right,
the doctor's office.
Or those children's books,
you see that, and these are white images. So what are you implying?
Yeah.
What are you telling children? And black people see that. They are head over heels about these movies as well.
Mm-hmm. Listen,
and they will be the first ones to say it doesn't matter what color Jesus is.
Well, if it don't matter.
These people have not taken human psychology 101 courses that you can get, you know, for free. You are affecting the psychology. You're crippling the psychology of people. How they, because when you talk about, you know, improving on something, so take the black Jesus and we, you know, improve, make the image more of his likeness. To improve means to increase the value of. So what have we done to really improve our conditions by creating a black Jesus? We have not increased the value of anything.
Right. Not our situation. But, you know, when War of Deen Muhammad came after Elijah Muhammad had passed and he came to the leadership of the Nation of Islam, he put a piece out to the churches to remove all imagery, you know, because in Islam, there is no. You're not supposed
There's
to have
no
a
imagery.
Picture.
And right? I can respect that,
mm-hmm.
Oshie.
Yeah.
I can.
Yeah.
If you type, go to Google now, right? And type in image of God. Put the word image. Just put images of God. I say no more.
Yeah, exactly. You see what you
because
comes
if I was 8, 9 years old and I hear, you know, we're going to church and I hear this God, we're praying over our food. You know, I'm going to Google, what does this God look like?
Mm-hmm.
And as an 8 or 9 year old, I'm just not going to have the knowledge to dissect all of that. You know, I'm imprinted now. I'm imprinted. And then when I see television, I see society, this is reinforced that somehow I'm different in a way that puts me at an advantage. And the only way that they could have been empowered and to have these notions of supremacy is if it was backed legally. And that's going back to Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia is the key, ain't it?
So that's the key. So if God was, you know, God in Virginia, he backed. They put in the law that God was on the side of the master. And what they were doing was A-okay in God's sight. But they had to have something backing this notion of them being different. And when it was put forth in the church, in the law, and also in the imagery that was around during colonial America, there was no doubt about whites being supreme over all groups, because they had a threefold backing of that. It's just like gold, like I said in the movie, once backed the dollar and gave it its value. God backed whites and gave them their value, the notion of white supremacy. And you can go many places, man. I know people are not traveling as much, but if you're on the highways, you can definitely see, you know, places, billboards, especially in Georgia, Tifton, Georgia, in Florida. And they have these white images of Jesus. Do you know how many millions of people ride 75, the most traveled highway in the country, are exposed and see that? Now, throughout the year, you've been bombarded, basically, with imagery that in no way you're able to measure on a conscious level. But it's in your subconscious. We think that we are just in so much control of our brains and, you know, I'm in control, I'm aware of what I'm doing. And, you know, we've seen documentaries on that where you're not in control. Your subconscious has pretty much has a lot to do with what you're thinking and what you like and dislike and how you feel about yourself. And so there's no movements on that. And so we have it's in the making. It's very close. A nonprofit organization that's entitled ERICA, Ending Religious Iconography in America.
Oh, okay.
Now, Oshie, there are many different ways that we could take it, and we could talk about that, you know, at another show as far as this nonprofit. But is it realistic to ask America? And that's what we're doing. We're asking because we don't own the networks. Because if I own the networks, like the own or whatever, there would be no imagery, no religious imagery at all. And, you know, not a lot of shows that, you know, like not your Black Dynasties and your Black Falcon Crest, none of that, none of those Envy Thou Oppressor shows as well. But that's another subject as well.
Yeah, don't envy the oppressor.
Well, listen, but to ask them to not have these images, man, not make these movies, that's
why, might be unrealistic. See, that's the point about what Caucasians has done. Not only did he colonize the world, he colonized the information about the world, and particularly of theology. So his thing is, I'm going to dominate the imagery of theology. And so when you talk about ancient Kemet or Egypt, they always put their face on it. Even to the day, even though debates have been won, professionals, scientists, archaeologists, anthropologists, historians, they've argued, Dr. Sheikh Andrew Jop, put forth the argument about The ancient Kemetic people or Egyptian people were black. They were Africans. He won the debate in 74. He proved it. In fact, the smoking gun was the melanin dosage test that he had developed. Mm-hmm. You know, when you extract the melanin from the mummies. And so it was, he won the debate. But yet and still today, when you look at A&E, National Geographic, the Learning Channel, PBS, or whatever, if they talk about ancient Kemet, I just saw it just recently.
All day.
They're looking Caucasian. But if they show some original man,
yeah. Original human being.
Yes.
You're going to see white people in caves, man.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to take a break. When we come back from break, we got a lot of callers. For those who are hanging on, you can hit star twice and you can get in and ask your question, comment, or concern to Brother Jeremiah Kamara. And we're going to take this break. When we come back, we'll be on the further discussion on holy hierarchy, the religious roots of white racism in America. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
About time you go to feel it.
to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Mandrell, Fence Walk, 72. Love it. I'm going to play a little something for you right here, a little trailer of Holy Hierarchy.
If we don't understand early Virginia, it'll be difficult to fully understand racism in America.
Jesus was a white man too.
We're going to protect Christianity.
Jesus, he had a rough but kind face, sea blue eyes.
Because Africans were not believers in Christ.
Well, certainly I believe in segregation because God teaches it.
The Bible is a pillar of white supremacy.
The white race is supreme by virtue of God's own blessing.
White people want to see white angels. That's cool for white people.
White is the norm for humanity.
These other populations are not fully human in the way that whites are human.
None of these books is written by God.
People say it doesn't matter what color Jesus is or what color whatever God they're worshiping is. I would strongly object to that.
Images of God and Mary and the apostles and the saints as white.
Hebrew Bible, for example, was not opposed to the shedding of blood.
Holy Hierarchy. Once again, I'm with my good brother and friend, Brother Jeremiah Kamara, and we're talking today about his recent documentary, Holy Hierarchy, The Religious Roots of Racism in America. I apologize. Sorry about that. Brother Jeremiah, you with me?
I'm with you. I'm with you.
All right. I had to play that trailer so people can get an idea. Like I said, I think it's an outstanding documentary. Well produced, and of course you are the producer, director, the narrator, you name it, you did it. The editor, you name it, you did it. That's impressive, man. You know, because the iconography you have in the documentary is on point, man. It really states the case, you know.
Yeah. You know, we think about history and these things that happened hundreds of years ago, and we just say, oh, that doesn't have anything to do with where we are now, and nothing could be further from the truth, man. Virginia is where the party started. This is where racism was perfected, and we think that all of that is gone and over.
Right.
It's no longer relevant. But, you know, like I mentioned, it's like a tree, and those roots run deeply, and they continue to bear fruit. So I wanted to just let it be known, you know, that Virginia, really, you can move out of Virginia, but you can still have a Virginia state of mind. It had all the superstars, you know, that lived there. So, yeah, I'm excited about it, man. I'm glad you had an opportunity to watch it.
I am too, man. In fact, I'm saying to our listeners, you can go to Amazon.com and put in Holy Hierarchy. And you can purchase it to play for you one time, or you can purchase it itself and it'll play whenever you want it to play on stream, correct?
That's correct. You can rent, you know, if you have Amazon Prime, then you already have access to it. So you're good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to go to Amazon, you could rent it or purchase it. So either way it goes. But if you have Amazon Prime, then it's available for you to watch at any time.
Yeah. In fact, I'm gonna be honest with you. You should get it and invite people over, just like we did for Hidden Colors, you know,
right.
In that particular
mm-hmm.
series. Invite people over, watch it, and discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a tough
mm-hmm.
one, though.
It's a tough one because I know it's challenging your theology. It's challenging all the things that you grew up to believe and that your parents told you to believe, you know, and the church has told you to believe. And it's very tough. Well, we got a caller. Caller 646, good afternoon.
Hey, Oshie, what's happening to you and your guest, man?
Hey, good Jay. Day. You too, Jay.
Hey, listen, it seems like the church may be finished economically with this coronavirus and what's going on. Because these pork chop chicken eating institutions can't get the people into the churches the way they used to. And the Cash App, the PayPal, and all of these other trickery systems monetarily that they're using, they working for too good. I had heard one of those pork chop chicken eaters talking about how they was having trouble paying their mortgage. And that now that the people ain't coming in, dropping the dime in the bucket. So it's going to be real interesting to see what happens in regards to these churches. You know, now me, myself, I could care less if they stay open or closed because they don't do anything, most of them, anyway, to help the people. Now, there are some churches and there are some pastors that I must honestly say I have to take my hat off to. I don't know, Brother Kamar, if you ever heard of a guy out in New Jersey, a Reverend Buster Sawyer?
Yes, I have. Absolutely. Matter of fact, I met him at Harvard. We were on the same panel in 2008. And, I'm very familiar with him. He did the CNN documentary about debt. Black debt.
Well, he's the type of pork chop chicken eater that people need to follow and support. Because the one thing I can say about him is he's about building the community, and he's shown it and he's proven it. Where his church is at, the people have basically built the whole community up. And he's constantly putting forward things to help our people economically, you know, to get us out of debt and to move forward in a, you know, progressive way economically.
Right.
So, you know, these are the type of individuals that we should be supporting and putting out there instead of this piece of garbage, Cutthroat Dollar and T.G. Jakes and, you know, the rest of them charlatans. So, Brother,
yeah.
I'd just like to thank you for what you're doing, and I will definitely take a moment this weekend if I get that opportunity to go to Prime and check out your documentary, your film, your work, man. And thank you, man.
Man, I appreciate you. Thanks for your comment, brother. Thank you so much.
AJ.
Thanks for your support.
AJ, it's well worth it, brother. You'll have a good weekend, okay? It's well worth it.
I saw some of his other stuff. I just never had the opportunity to spend the amount of time necessary to view it. You know, you start something, then something comes up, and you got to turn it off.
Right.
But listen, you say this about the brother. He's always been a truth teller in regards to this whole religious trickery. I just wish there was more brothers like him out there that would be able to educate our people into what this whole spirituality and religion is really about, because it's done a great disservice to us as a people. So have a good day, brother.
All right, Jay.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
You know, Oshie, it's crazy, man, because Brother Jay mentioned the church, and it might go out of business financially, but they were bailed out.
Yeah, they're gonna get bailed out. I was gonna say that.
Let me tell you, man, it was the Catholic Church. I'm not sure the amount. I think it was like I know it was like over $3 billion. They were the biggest receivers of government money, you know, pandemic, you know, relief efforts in the world. Now, you're talking about the Catholic Church, who has a mighty, extensive, unlimited reach. It doesn't matter if you are a small black church or a big black mega church or a small church, white church in the country, or you're Billy Graham's son or Joel Osteen. If you start teaching a doctrine that is different from the doctrines and the canons that came out the Catholic Church, your congregation will leave you. If you get to talking, there is no heaven, there is no hell, gay people are allowed to come, and God loves everyone. If you start doing this, we have seen what has happened to people. So you can call yourself Holiness Pentecostal or Methodist or Jehovah Witness or Baptist, you know, or Seventh-day Adventist or, you know, whatever. But you are a product of the Catholic Church. Now, here it is, the Catholic Church notorious for the child molestations and the sexual misconduct, as they like to call it. But yet, there is no one on earth who can bring them to justice. So that means that the Catholic Church is the most powerful organization, institution, entity
in the world.
So you're protecting pedophiles, but yet you want me to be interested in R. Kelly. Mm. You want to put some Netflix? So I will watch that once Netflix gets a documentary, not a film, but a documentary about not only the abuse, we know about that, but how they've gotten away with it. And I know I'm going into another subject, but he made me think about that. They received over $3 billion, you know, as far as government pandemic relief.
And they don't need a dime of that. The Catholic
Church, they don't need a dime. They're already quarantined. Yeah, they're quarantined from women. They're quarantined from a lot of things, man.
But the amount of wealth that the Catholic Church has amassed and over these centuries, remember the edict of the Pope, go out there and, you know, subjugate all infidels and take their shit.
They have their own currency.
Yeah.
they operate outside of the currency, the country's currency. They're outside of that. You can go there and, like the mafia has done, you know, go there and get your money laundered. They have, you know, clerks at the door. Yeah. You'll never see them, and they're laundering your money, and thank you, Father, and all this type of stuff. So you're under the Roman Catholic umbrella, man. Yeah. You can call it what you want. And the Roman Catholic Church is all about symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the church, what's the name of it? Basilica.
Mm-hmm.
And the ceiling.
Right, like the Sistine Chapel or something like that.
The Sistine mm-hmm. Chapel, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just imagery, reinforcement. And so you look at a lot of the statues and things of the men, they obviously had really something against men with larger penises. They had to. having a large penis was definitely not a virtue in Greece or Rome. So that was never illustrated. I would not have wanted to have been a statue.
That ain't you, right? That ain't my statue.
No, I'm not saying, listen, we're not going there. But I'm saying I would not want to be a statue in Rome and be represented in that way.
Yeah.
But maybe that was a true depiction. I don't know who gives a damn, but I'm just being facetious about the imagery and the iconography that exists.
Well, I'm going to take another call. I'm going to take another call. 334-334. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie, and thank you for taking my call. And it's such a pleasure to meet you, Brother Jeremiah Kamara, by way of phone. I've seen your slave sermons, and you've given me some homework for the weekend with regards to the Holy Hierarchy, so I'll be looking at that this weekend.
Thank you so for
your work. I really appreciate it. The question I have for you is, you know, we as Black people have been people who utilize our feelings, right? When you mentioned about the 1600 or 1660 slave code in Virginia, you know, you had this European counterpart creating these kinds and types of laws by which other people had to act on, right? And so you had Africans who were brought in that were literally beaten. They were taken out of the element, number one, and then beaten into submission to be able to believe. Catapult into today, we have functional illiteracy or illiteracy that's plaguing the Black community. How has that compounded in this hierarchical process and going the way that we're going as Black people and religiosity?
Well, let me say this. You talk about being illiterate and then being heavily into the church. Is that what your question is? Like, did I understand that correctly?
Basically, you know, it's one less for some congregants. It's one less thing I have to deal with. You know, we're living in this age of information, and so I don't have to worry about reading or writing or entertaining. Just work on my feelings, work on my emotions, and I'll feel all right, right? And so it'll lock me in, and that's one less thing I have to deal with.
Right, exactly. I mean, but, you know, you're looking at, it's just many people, man, that with different degrees of involvement in social media. So we're not reading as much. You've got things like Instagram and things where people are used to, you know, watching things and not reading things. That may bode well for being less interested in reading the Bible. Okay. Because as one scientist said, you know, the Bible well read is the greatest case, you know, to not believe in it. So maybe that'll bode well. But, you know, when you were talking, I was thinking back to Virginia and how you had a man, one in particular, his name was John. I'm sorry, but my memory is escaping me today. But he was really one of the first enslaved Blacks to garner a white audience. And he's actually the symbol. And this is a shame, but I don't even remember. And he's actually the symbol of my slave sermons. But because there were so many Johns that I was reading about, you know, during the times of Virginia that had these different cases. So his name was John something. But anyway, he was able to bring forth the Bible through imagery in his words. The power in his words painted a picture for you.
Okay.
And so those people, the Blacks that were attending and the whites, they were illiterate. So they didn't need to have the knowledge of reading when they could actually have the pictures in their head that he was painting to them. So that's a historical thing. But when you look at today's youth, probably not reading as much, it probably makes them less interested in wanting to even read the Bible, especially with words like thou and shall. And so I think there is less interest there in reading it. But I don't, and there is some, there are, you know, statistics are showing that millennials are moving away from religion. They're not as entrenched in religion as before. And I do think a lot of that is going, it has to do with the fact that they're not actually in the Bible. They're not reading as much.
That answers thank you.
Your question. Yeah, you're welcome.
404-453.
Hey, Yuhuru family,
Yuhuru. Yuhuru. Yuhuru.
Hey, Yuhuru.
Hey, my man Jeremiah, you right on the money, man. You right on the money. This church, and my man Jay Wright, this church is shut down. Ain't nobody going for it. But you kind of touched on, you know it's going to be the new God. It's already here, right? You knew who, what people worshiping now, right? You know what they worshiping now, right?
What's that?
That damn phone, okay? The new God is the AI, okay?
Artificial intelligence, huh? The artificial, the new cell phone.
It has to be something artificial. It has to be.
Yes, sir. Because look here. You look at this way, the white folks artificial anyway, man. They ain't natural. So they got to come up with something to keep this artificial game going on, bro. Okay, we natural. Simple as that. I leave it like that, man. Oh, one more thing, man. I heard you on Carl say you and your wife started out painting houses and cutting people's yard. You still in the
doubt.
You still in the non-care business?
Yeah, at my house. I do the lawn at my house, bro.
Yes, sir. Hey, good show, no doubt, man. But this artificial intelligence goes new God is now, y'all. So you might be all tap on.
But listen, Wes, if you're driving east on 20 and you get off there by Conyers, he does have a car wash, and if you need your emissions check, he can do that too.
Probably pass by there, man, because I'm close to Conyers, man. I appreciate it, man. I love
all
y'all.
Right, brother.
All right. You, take care, brother. No doubt. Peace.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had started out the conversation, and I was talking about, you know, the trauma that whites have been through, and I don't think that you're able to go through that amount of trauma and not have it affect you on a cellular level. Just as I don't think that you can, you know, as black people went through the unspeakable degrees of mental and physical trauma and it not affect us on a cellular level. And I don't, you know, neither group has actually got, you know, counseling for it because somebody out that group would have to be the counselor, you know, or maybe not. But I don't know how you would go about group therapy. But there's been a lot of trauma, man, on both both parts. But I'm not, you know, comparing the two because there's no comparison. Ours has been going on for. So well, the way that they dealt with their trauma was to overtake things. And what ultimately happened, Oshi, is they have us enclosed. We're enclosed, man. How often do our feet touch the grass, bare feet touch the grass and the dirt, man? How
you
often
need
are
that.
We grounding
That's
ourselves?
That's a connection. You
and
need
you,
that.
Yeah, you need that. Mm-hmm. We're not grounding ourselves, man. And to have us in cubicles and these offices for 8 hours a day, for 40 hours a week, for 40 years of your life, and then when you get into the older part of your life, you are pretty much imprisoned to the inside because you've worked for all of these years. It's unnatural, man. Everything that we have been doing is unnatural. So this whole, I don't think there's anything wrong with social media, with artificial intelligence. I think that there must be a balance. Everything can be, you know, we can made into an advantage, but you can't do it without balance. If you have a millennial, they're on social media more than they're doing other things and other sources of learning or, you know, activity, physical activity, you're going to have some problems. But I just don't think that it's balanced. And that's the main thing that we have to seek is a balance of all of those things.
Well, one of the things, that's what we must have, and that's Ma'at. That's Ma'at, you know, truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, reciprocity, order, balance. But we don't have that in society, because what you have in a society that Europeans created is domination. In order for them to have, a whole bunch of people can have not, and they in turn control everything. That's why, to me, this recent situation, and people are looking at seeing all these things that are changing. They're changing names on teams. They're changing all this other different iconography that we have been seeing for decades, you know.
But Right. No doubt, man. So we have to think our way out of this, Oshie.
Yeah. Well,
that's it, man.
Well, see,
nobody's gonna give
do.
Us anything, man.
No,
it's just not gonna happen.
But see, what prevents us from uniting, coming together, this one religion particularly, is Christianity, because Christianity is an individualistic religion. You know, you must choose God as your personal savior. How you doing, brother? Yeah. Well, I'm blessed and highly favored. Oh, you blessed and highly favored. Your community is going to hell. Your family ain't doing good. You know, your close relatives ain't doing good. But you are blessed and highly favored. Because why? You believe that Jesus is God. And Jesus is your savior. And that's all you need. That's all you need. And so, therefore, you go on in your life, living a mundane life, hoping really that the tribulation happens or Armageddon happens so you can be raptured.
You see your mundane existence, especially when you make claims that God is somehow touching you. Out of all the 8 billion people in the world, he's got his hands on you. God bless me.
Right.
So you're delusioned to that degree, not knowing that this world is basically a product of cause and effect. So, I mean, I think we use chaos in the wrong way. Chaos is really order. Chaos is based off of cause and effect. I would, you know, think that we would probably be best in using the word randomness if we're just talking about something that's, you know, no order. But there's no randomness in this. This is all, you know, cause and effect. And so according to the Roman calendar, it's 2020. My friend was telling me about this guy, you know, the brother that they call Wall Street, you know, it's in prison.
Right.
And he said, the more education I got, the less excuses I had. And here we are in the Roman calendar of 2020, and we're still talking about, you know, I love you, Jesus, and Jesus is coming. I went to a funeral, man, about a week ago, actually, and last Saturday, and Oshie, if I closed my eyes, I would not have known if this was the 1920s. Or if it was 2020, I wouldn't have known. It's, you know, the same songs. You know, I won't complain. And, you know, very beautiful, very entertaining. Love it. You cannot deny that.
Yeah, you're right about that.
It was a COVID funeral where, of course, there was no PA, and it was beautiful. Because we had 4 a cappella singers, one after the other, you know, one by one, and they all were beautiful. And then when, you know, the pastor, of course, what he said in his eulogy, I didn't know if it was 1920 or 2020. It didn't matter. We have not progressed in the church. We have tried to progress by having these preachers who are, you know, your prophet, preachers of prophet. What do you call
is that? Is that what do you mean? Prophet is like in being prophetic or prophet
no,
being money?
P-R-O-F.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is it called? Prosperity gospel.
Right.
We tried to make it different. We brought this on here at New Birth. They had one preacher. His name is, I can't remember, Stephen Davis. And I just don't think he was well-known enough. So they went and recruited Jamal Bryant to fill his spot here. And he was pretty much, you know, a heavy hitter in Baltimore. Could you know, garner a crowd. So they needed that mega status.
Right.
Because of the entertaining aspect of it. We have to entertain. But in terms of the words, man, they've found ways to mask it, but you're basically saying the same thing because the mental landscape never changes.
Yeah.
And that mental landscape ultimately is to avoid hell and meet up with your maker one day and have God say a job well done. That's what you're doing all this for that. So if that is still your main goal and your main premise, then the landscape itself is not going to change because every word that you put out is to get to that. And you still hear that, man, to this day.
Mm-hmm. Right. That day you want to meet the maker and say, good, and, you know, my faithful servant, you know.
That's basically it, man.
Yeah.
And you know, Oshie, if you were there, if they were in church and they really wanted to talk about some subjects, let's talk. Because you have people at your disposal for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, see, because as far as racism goes, man, you can't talk about white racism and not talk about white supremacy. And you can't talk about white supremacy without talking about Christianity. They're one and the same. So you have to listen, wherever there is a notion of superiority, then there has to be a notion of inferiority that exists somewhere. So who is this inferior human that you're speaking of? When you say that we are the sons of Ham, who's the cursed son of Noah, well, black is the antithesis of white. You would naturally think that. That's still with us, even though there are people who don't even know that story. It doesn't matter. We pass on behavior and beliefs to our youth. They may not be as involved in the church nowadays, Oshie, but there are very few youth who are not believers in a God and prayers.
Sure. Especially here, because Christianity is predominant. It's dominant, you know, unless your environment is Islam or unless you are Easterner and you come and you have Hinduism, Taoism, or Buddhism or whatever. But basically here in America, the predominance is Christianity in its various forms, from Catholicism, Protestantism, the Mormons. You know, it's Christianity. Everything.
It's Christianity.
It's Christianity,
and it's all under Roman Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
You're under that umbrella. You can claim, I know you're Protestant or whatever, but deviate from what the Catholic Church put forth originally about the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Deviate from that,
mm-hmm,
and see and watch the consequences. Yeah.
And see what's interesting and what we have to understand. In ancient Kemet, you had the one God. You had Amun-Ra. You had the one God, which is the main God. Amun-Ra. Amun, the unseen.
That's where they got their monotheistic idea from.
Exactly.
In the first place.
That's right. See, nothing that Europeans have done is new. They are plagiarists. They are, you know,
right. But if you notice, they went back. They went back to their pluralistic God views after Amun-Ra.
Mm-hmm.
That did not, you know, that wasn't their end to Egypt. Now they still had Amun-Ra in the culture, but many people had multiple gods, which is very which is democratic.
Yeah.
Hell, in India, man, there's 300 million gods.
Right.
Or 30 million. 30 million,
30 million gods.
30 million gods. in India. You know?
Yeah.
So, you again, it gets back
But you know, though, you know, I look at it this way. I don't care if you have one God or 30 million. The problem I have is you imposing what that belief is or your belief is on others and denigrating right. others if they don't believe it, or even killing them if they don't believe it. You know,
well, Oshie, let me tell you, man, what we talked about yesterday at lunch, you have to, in order for you to devote your attention to one man, this Jesus, let's look at our lives. Oshie, we've run into some brilliant minds over the years, very smart people.
Yes.
There are some miraculous people out here, inventors, thinkers, musicians, artists, you know, plumbers, architects, that whose story is as worthy of any story there is as anybody else's. People have tremendous stories to tell, man, of how they arrived at where they are, okay? Now, Jesus is one person with one story, those who believe he existed. The only way that you would pay that much attention to a being that walked on this earth is that being had to be supernatural. Or otherwise, there are too many other great people to just focus your entire existence around. And we know that can't be the case, Oshie. We know that is not science, that we can't prove that scientifically, that someone walked on water who didn't even have webbed feet, that someone was born by way of a virgin. You can't, our excuses have to stop as our education grows, as our knowledge grows. We can no longer hold these things in value anymore, that someone died and then came back to life. They would have to be, this supernatural being. Now, because we know that this didn't happen, somewhere in our minds, we get that this, and your brain is in disagreement with this because it would rather have certainty than belief.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of this, we have to create, we need help. We need help from higher institutions. We need help now from the government. You know, in Virginia, their legislature from about 1662 until around 1691 or 1692, somewhere, their legislature passed many laws that established their beliefs and their commandments regarding black inferiority. It was a fact. You look at their offsprings. How can that go away that soon? You know, we have right now, we're many protesters, there are many whites who are standing with blacks in this thing. But that notion of black inferiority is something, man, that was stained and etched and ingrained. It's in the molecules of this country, of the soil of this country, man. That is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't affect those who don't even envy their oppressor or you know, choose none of his ways if you have to. You know, I don't, Oshie, I got married in black. I didn't give a damn about being married in white. Yeah. I got married in black and gold.
Right on.
You know, I've always been an outlier, and that's what I tell people. You can pull away from this religion, and you think the jump is, you know, 30 stories high. It's not. It's a half-inch jump.
That's right.
It won't hurt.
Get out.
And but see, these but rules, but, man, but see that, these but see rules those that they established in Virginia, Oshie, they gave whites advantages and privileges
and every
that
time.
Allowed them to have, you know, acquire wealth and to pass it on. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But we, as black people, have got to realize one thing right in front of our face. We have a tremendous amount of wealth and resources. And you know what that is? It's each other. It's not the dollar. Listen, man, like we were talking, if someone's sitting next to you and they have a heart attack, you can't lay money down on their chest and revive them. Going to have something that you're doing. We have to connect the dots, as George Frazier said. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up to us. But as long as we focus on us and what we have to do, shit, it's over with, man.
But see, the problem is that they have a vice grip on our minds. We are at war for the minds of our people. And we are bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of our inferiority and their superiority. Mm-hmm. You know, they have beaten us down so bad that we hate ourselves. We hate the way we look, our hair, our nose, our lips. Bleaching creams, not just in Nigeria, 75%, across the world, in the Caribbean, you know, big time.
Right.
And even though there have been some countries that have outlawed bleaching cream, but hell, you outlaw something, we got the quote, white market. I don't say black. But they got the underground market for that. So I'm saying is that because they got that vice grip on our minds, it is very difficult, and particularly because the Christianity speaks to you individually, not collectively. It's hard for us to unify. It's hard for us to come together and to build communities. Hell, we live here in Atlanta, man, and we don't have one damn supermarket. All these millions of people of us. And the so-called wealth that we have, the biggest so-called baddest city, the quote black Mecca, and we ain't got a supermarket? We got to go to Publix and Kroger's and whoever
when
else, Wakefield's?
And these churches, man.
Yeah.
Listen, when you go to Creflo Dollar's church, it's like, it's been described as like going to a Michael Jackson concert, man. The PA systems and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You got all of that.
It's a production.
You come out on that street, you have nothing. There may be a few black businesses, but nothing, basically.
Yeah, I drove by his area.
Nothing.
Right,
Right, so, but I mean, you're right. We're in vice grips because they mask it.
Right.
And we fall for it. Like they said, you know, all men are created equal. Okay. Now, they said it's self-evident that all men are created equal. Right. So if that's the case, then why would it be necessary, you know, to even declare, you know, to state something that was already had been
self-evident,
being self-evident,
being self-evident.
Why would you have to say it?
Yeah, because
unless you already had notions that all men were not, you don't even have to state if it's self-evident. Why do you state it in the first place?
Because they're stating it because of them. We're saying it's self-evident that we as Caucasian men are created equal. Everybody outside of us, they're not equal. They're not even human as far as we're concerned. See?
Yeah.
And so they can treat them the way they have treated people. Like I said, Europeans, you know, when they placed themselves on top of the world of on this pedestal and kicked everybody else off, they went around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of. And if you didn't bow down to their theology, if you didn't bow down to their mode of doing stuff, you were going to be eliminated. You have to.
The Bible it sets the precedence for all of that. You know, chosen, you know, it's all kind of favoritism and nepotism. And wherever there's differences, these differences, we got to deal with them. They got to be dealt with. If you look different, if you think differently. Mm-hmm. You know, you read the Bible, it says, chosen thee to be a special people.
Right.
The Lord loved Israel.
And so.
Chosen Jacob unto himself. God went. What it says, I have chosen the seed of Abraham. You know,
mm-hmm.
this is replete throughout the Bible.
Yeah.
So you're see, setting the precedent.
Yeah, and so what are you saying then about God? That God chooses whoever he likes, but amongst all the human beings, you know, on the planet. But he chose these people. And how have they behaved? What have they done? And I ain't talking about the European Jews, because they're late converts to Judaism. But they're the ones who dominate and control it. And when you talked about, you know, choosing somebody, they believe that they are chosen. And they are chosen to do what they have done. Take Palestine from the Palestinians. Undermine right. other governments. Do what they have done to us. That's why, to me, when Nick Cannon was saying what he was saying and DeSean Jackson saying what he was saying, I wish some of our scholars, you know, would have said, hey, these Europeans, they're not Semitic people, so how can you be anti-Semitic? No. This is who they are. And this is where they came from. And this is how they dominated. But see, there's that fear. One of the things that is real clear about Christianity, it puts a fear in you. Just like I was talking back, I was in Milwaukee at talking with a group of people and this one Christian dude, and I said, I know what it is. You rather believe and it not be true than to not believe and it be true. So you're going to continue to believe this story, this lie, because of the fear of you burning in hell. Well, you in hell. Your people are in hell. You know.
And all we got to realize is, man, these were just laws, Oshie, that they put in place to create the okie doke on black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's crazy, Oshie. In Virginia, man, in 1667, they wrote into law that God himself had rendered the slaves inferior, had rendered blacks inferior, because he understood the whites. This was written into law. This is the same government we're under now.
Mm-hmm.
Lepers don't change their spots. This never been designed for us to enjoy the fruits. You know,
right. That's what I'm saying.
This country is not. So what you have a choice then. You can keep trying to get, you know, ingratiate yourself
mm-hmm.
into society. You know, your whole goal should be to reduce, or, you know, you can't eliminate it totally because you're in the system, in the society, but reduce your dependency on this establishment in their ways. You know, that's a lot tougher to do.
Very.
Obviously, because
very difficult.
The greatest employer of black people in the United States is the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's the greatest employer of black people. So,
that's right. Even more so than Walmart.
Right.
It is. Government.
So you're trapped. Mm-hmm. You're trapped. But the crazy thing is, black people have the talent. Oh, my goodness. It's crazy. The intelligence. Wow. You know, I'm surrounded by millennials, man. Black millennials, like, all the time. And okay. I'm like, whoa. I love their views. I love their approach, man. Mm-hmm. Their angles on life. They just, you know, and they just need to stay with it, you know, but it's beautiful to see that. So we have the talent, man. We can do it.
Listen, we have everything that we need. The only thing the only thing we don't have is our mind. We have all.
And that's it.
That's it.
And that's why a lot of people say, well, Jeremiah, why haven't you done anything as it relates to blacks and economics? Because the first thing that you think about when you see a black person who has decided to abandon his or her belief, we'll think about the money. We think that they're angry about the money, because that's the main thing we complain about. They, man, taking all your money. They're crooks. They're dressing with these suits on. They got these multi-million-dollar houses. They don't pay taxes. But if your mind was right, you wouldn't even be giving your money in the first place.
I say.
You know, and that's something that we have to, there's, listen, you can argue and all you want, but giving your money to the church has not been beneficial to you. There are so many things, I've said this in many interviews, you know, that you could do with the money that you were donating to the church. You can always hire professionals to educate your children if you don't have that ability. That is one of the greatest tithes, so to speak, that you can do. If you're tied up and you work and maybe you don't know the math, you don't know the science, you don't know the art form or whatever, you can always hire somebody to do that. You can hire, pay a chess grand wizard to, or whatever they call them, you know, to teach your child chess.
Right.
Piano player to come and teach your child music. The trouble that they're having in math, a tutor. That is an investment right there. That's a big time investment. That's good. That you can see. You can put that money aside for your 401k, because in the real world, first of all, your employer, I know in this state, I don't know about all states, I think it's in all states, your employer does not have to tell you that they stop matching your 401k. Secondly, if you have a 401k, you're also in jeopardy of, you know, when this economy collapses, you mm-hmm. collapse with it.
That's it.
So put your money aside. Pay yourself first. So when you have these hard COVID times like this, you have something to fall back on.
I would agree with
you. Give your money to the preacher and to the church, and he's good. But yet, he's no different than you are. He didn't get his money because of some this benevolence of God making sure. No, the preacher got his money because you gave it to him.
Because you like now, his message.
If, now, here it is, Oshie. If he didn't believe, say for instance, your Creflos and your other, you know, I'm not just picking on him. It's so many of them. But let's say that they did, that they knew that the Bible was just a retelling of pre-existing myths and legends. Let's say they knew that. But they, then, I mean, in some way, you would have to respect their hustle. Because they're a con artist. I can't imagine that at no point in time during T.D. Jakes' life, he hasn't come across somebody who could tell him a little different, give him, offer him another perspective on the Bible and this, what it means to black people and the damage that it has caused to black people. Maybe not, though. Maybe no one. Because I know pastors, man, they get their butts kissed all day.
Times, right.
No one disagrees with them. So maybe they haven't.
And believe me, but, if they did, they would shun them. They don't want to hear it.
They would shun them, exactly. Yeah, but you cannot tell me, like, you're getting up there in age, Creflo and T.D. Jakes. And it's very hard not to have heard the truth at some point in your life. You'd have to really be in a bubble or a real isolated solar system of people for you not to have heard anything this far in your life.
Yeah.
But they won't entertain for, they'll tell you to, you know, what a life, man. That's not freedom.
Yeah.
And you have to do this. You have to come up with a sermon on Sunday. And they know that they don't do this. That's why they steal sermons off the radio and steal. you can preachers have access to sermons.
Yeah. Well, you will.
That have already been delivered that they could take and use and kind of use their own words and stuff like that. And no one will ever know.
No. But just like in contradiction, you know, all the things that preachers are taught to say, little catchphrases, little things that can continue to spur the congregation on. You know, tell somebody. Look, turn to your neighbor and say, neighbor.
Now they can't do that now with the COVID thing. Right. I noticed at the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
But at the funeral, he recruited. Come on up. You know, I know. I mean, it was just, we're not here for your recruitment. We're here to honor the deceased and and give our homage and condolences to the family.
Well, see, the thing
but
is,
this pastor recruited, and I've seen that so often.
Me too.
I mean, this is crazy. Like, listen, this opportunity of COVID presented itself, and we had a lot of downtime. And this downtime was absolutely perfect to be reflective and pensive in how you are going to continue with the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. What is your thought process going to be about now? What is your relationship in church going to be about now? How do you feel about church now?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about religion, prayer? I can look a little deeper into the existence or non-existence of the things and events and places in the Bible. You had time to do this. But when you have your head stuck in the sand.
Or up your ass.
Of your church. Right. Of religion. I mean, it's hard. It's hard. It is. But I just want you to see that your church was not essential. That right there, you can't argue with that. Texas says shut them down. That meant Joel Osteen as well.
Yeah. Listen.
Now, if you're still communicating with him, man, I don't know. Maybe you are.
I've run past time. I appreciate it. I'm going to give you a couple of closing remarks, and I appreciate you, my brother. I respect you and love you. I love your work. And
always, man.
Yeah,
you know, sure. You know this wasn't an interview.
Right.
Because there were no questions asked. This was another lunch.
That's right.
I should have had some food in front of me. This was just a lunch.
That's right. Another continuation. I love it. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, we got to meet again and do it again, man.
You know,
always appreciate you, man.
Thank you, my brother.
Very good to see you yesterday, man. And I just want to let the people know that I appreciate their interest and support in my work. I get a lot of emails. I want to thank everybody. And I want to continue to do it. I'm looking forward to this nonprofit organization that's coming along. And I want to just have everybody, you know, visit the website, jeremiahkamara.com, and it shows you where you can watch the films and everything there. My email address is slavesermons@gmail.com. And it's been a privilege and an honor, man. Oh, I appreciate this.
You too, dear brother. Bless you, man.
All right, brother. Thank you.
We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Be safe out there. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie. Bifahodia means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace, family.